Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd at Season 8, Episode 84. And I hope everybody had a good Valentine's Day. Remember, our schedule this week, doing this on Monday. We will be off on Friday as Dave heads back east for a week. And then we'll pick things up next Tuesday, 8 days from now, kind of go back to our Tuesday-Friday schedule beginning next week as we get closer to the end and the beginning of the coming league year. And of course, coming up later this week, or actually tomorrow, I think we've got the beginning of the opening of the franchise tag window and all sorts of things, Dave. So yeah, we got a couple things we can get to today.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of the tag, you know, I know we probably didn't plan on hitting this in this order, but I wrote last night about the history of the Steelers with the franchise and transition tag. A lot of people, you know, I for the life of me, I couldn't remember when it was and who it was that introduced the franchise tag to the league. Obviously, you probably know the year because we talked about it before getting on the show, David. That actually, the franchise tag came into existence in 1992. Do you remember who it was that pushed it and why?
I'm making sure I understand the question properly. Who in terms of teams or ownership groups? I'm sure that's what you're referring to, right?
Right. Teams and ownership group pushed the franchise tag and came up with the franchise tag kind of idea.
Was it the Dallas Cowboys?
No, it was not.
Okay, I was thinking it was around Deion Sanders, who was bouncing around the Niners and the Cowboys. And Who was it?
Pat Bowlen of the
Broncos.
The Broncos and the whole John Elway thing. You know what I'm saying? We're not going to let John Elway walk and that kind of thing. So that was fun going back in and refreshing my memory on that late yesterday afternoon. But the Steelers, you know, the first time they used the franchise tag, David, you're probably old. You're definitely old enough to remember this. I don't know how much of the specifics you remember, though. You obviously should from growing up there and reading the papers every day in 1994, but it was Eric Green in 1994. And the franchise tag amount that year for tight ends was $1.434 million. And he and his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, did not embrace the franchise tag. The Steelers had reportedly at the time offered him a four-year contract that averaged $1.8 million, so almost $500,000 over the tag amount. But Green at that time reportedly wanted around, you know, $7 or $8 million a season. He helped. Do you remember him holding out that entire off season as part of the dispute? But he ultimately signed the franchise tag. Was there for the regular season opener against the Cowboys. He went on to catch 46 passes for 618 yards and 4 touchdowns in 15 regular season games that year. Added about 7 more for 101 yards and a touchdown in the playoff games. And then, lo and behold, the Steelers just, you know, they let him walk after that 1994 season because they decided to place the franchise tag on Carnell Lake in 1995, and he ultimately got the tag. I think he had something like a 25-day training camp holdout, ultimately signed a four-year $9.2 million contract that included it's fun to look at these numbers, that included a $2 million, you're a franchise tag player in 1995, you signed a four-year $9.2 million contract, and it includes a $2 million signing Bonus. And really, to kind of close this out quickly, Jason Gilden was the next player to get the tag in 2002. He did not get a long-term deal after that. The Steelers let him walk after, he signed a 5-year, $23 million contract quickly after getting the tag, but he only made it through 2 years of that deal and was gone. Mac, they had to wait till 2008 for the Steelers to use the tag again. That was Mac Starks. He got the transition tag. They did not sign him to a long-term deal. 2009, they placed a franchise tag on him. And that ultimately worked out into a 4-year, $26.3 million contract. After Starks in 2010 was Jeff Reed. It's a good thing they only gave him the franchise tag in 2010 and didn't sign him until a long-term deal, because if you remember, he struggled mightily during that season, and the Steelers had to cut him in mid-November of 2010. Lamar Woodley had the tag in 2011. That, of course, he handled that all right. A couple of weeks into training camp, the Steelers rewarded him with a 6-year, $61.5 million contract. We all know what happened to Lamar Woodley after that. Really, injuries took over. The Steelers, unfortunately, restructured his contract a couple of times, creating even more money, and it ultimately ended with him getting released by the Steelers in March of 2014. Jason Worlds, 2014, received a transition tag. Once again, good thing they didn't sign him to a long-term deal, because he abruptly retired in March of 2015, and then that brings us to last year and Le'Veon Bell, and the Steelers placing the franchise tag on him, and we all know how that played out. So going all the way back to, let's see, how many years is that? 92, 8, and let's see, another 17, what, 25 years of the franchise tag we've already had now, and the Steelers have used, you know, either the franchise or transition tag 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times.
Yeah, it's a good little, as you say, it's a fun kind of look back at Steeler history. The first thing I thought when you were going through it and talking about Eric Green is, you know, you look at the Steelers in the tight end position, and when you remember back in the glory days, the Super Bowl years, a lot of people might not remember who the Steelers' tight ends were. And they took a tackle, Larry Brown, and he was a tight end and made him a tackle. They had Randy Grossman for a while. The first big name tight end that I remember, Dave, in our lifetimes was Benny Cunningham, and he was the real deal. And Eric Green was the real deal as well. But, you know, Eric Green, I think he was a really good football player back in the day. When, you know, you think about when he was on the Steelers and who they were at that point in time and who his quarterbacks were, you know, I guess Eric Green is probably a guy who gets lost in Steeler history because they've had so many great players over the years. But he was a first round pick out of a school that nobody had heard of at the time, coming out of Liberty. Still, obviously, not a school that people think of when they think about football players, but. You know, he was a Steelers first-round pick, and he was a very interesting, an interesting choice and an interesting find that isn't, you know, often talked about when they talk about, you know, kind of unique draft picks that the Steelers have made over the years. That's high up there on the list, and he was a fun guy to watch.
46 receptions in 1994. That was what's that in today's money? You know, that's like 80 receptions for a tight end nowadays.
Sure. Sure.
You know, something like that. So, yeah, you know, Eric Green was a fun guy to definitely.
In 1984 would have meant his quarterback was. Mark Malone, maybe?
No, 94. 94.
Oh, 94, right. So who 94 was Neil O'Donnell, obviously.
Yeah, if you remember the playoff game against the Chargers, right?
Yeah, trying to hit Barry on the goal line.
Right, so, who was geez, we'd have to go back. Eric Green came into the league in, 90. Was it 90, I think, for Eric Green? And I'm trying to go back to who was his first quarterback in his first game. Was Bubby Brister. Yeah.
The end of the Bubby era.
Yeah. Rick Strom even made an appearance in the regular season opener against the Miami Dolphins in 1990. The Steelers lost that game 28-6. It was Bubby Brister. It was the well anticipated Bubby Brister versus Dan Marino matchup.
Yeah, there you go.
Bubby went seven of 18 for 76. Can you imagine if 7-18? Ben Roethlisberger went 7 of 18 for 76 yards with 3 interceptions and 3 sacks. Bubby had a quarterback rating of 12.5 in that game. Rick Strom made an appearance in that game, went 5 for 7, 76 yards, did not throw a touchdown or interception. He had a 106.8 pass rating. I'm sure Yinzers if Twitter would have been around in that day, I bet there was a strong push for Rick Strom to take over at quarterback then.
I think I've mentioned that Rick was a good friend of mine growing up.
I did not know that.
Yeah, he is a Fox Chapel kid who broke his leg his senior year and didn't play and ended up going to Georgia Tech anyway. And quarterbacked them for a couple years toward the end and ended up in Pittsburgh after being a couple other places for a while. Had a surprisingly long NFL career. Didn't see much action. I mean, I'd be surprised if there are many games that he threw more than 7 passes in his career. But he was an exceptional athlete at the time. We played baseball kind of pony league and, what's right before Legion Ball baseball together for years.
Boy, I'm going to have, he threw during his career.
Did he throw 150? Let me guess the over under where I put it. I would guess he threw in his NFL career. He didn't throw 150 passes.
Oh no, nowhere close to that.
But how many years? I mean, how many years are we talking about?
3 seasons, I think.
No. Much longer.
You sure about that?
His NFL career?
Rick Strom.
Yeah.
3 seasons, 89 to 91.
What teams?
The Steelers.
No, but I'm talking about his NFL career. He played with other teams.
Are you sure?
He was with the Lions for a while. I'll double check. Maybe I'm misremembering. Maybe he was on a taxi squad or something.
He might have been on a taxi. He might have.
Back then, I think it was still the taxi squad.
Right. Let's see. The Steelers from 89 to 93. He to 93, but he didn't have any stats in 92 or 93. He shows up at being with the Bills in 94. No stats, no games. And the Lions 1996. So he went from 92 to 96 with 0 stats.
Yeah. So, but I think he was in the league. I think he was getting paid for about 8 years, and he might actually have gotten his pension. And that, again, the rules were different back then about they didn't have practice squads. They had different types of situations, they had taxi squads and different ways to do it. But yeah, I was going to say that the game of 7 passes might have been his career high game of attempts.
Yeah, I'm sure it was because he had for his career 22 attempts, completed 14 of them. Boy, completing 63.6% of your passes, that's Landry Jones territory.
It's crazy. Yeah, all of a sudden you feel like it's the next Kirk Cousins.
7.4 yards per attempt. He did not throw a touchdown. He threw 1 interception during his – I guess the challenge for me now, and I got a ton of Steeler games in my library, of course, over the years collecting.
If you can find that opener against Miami.
Or do you think I can find the interception that he threw?
Oh, I want to see the opener. I'd love to see that game on YouTube and take a look at Rick. What year was that? It was what year?
1990, I believe.
1990. So 1990, I was.
Oh, wait. The that wasn't the, hold on a minute here. That wasn't the regular season opener in 1990. Hold on a minute here. No, they opened up in 1990 against the Browns, then played the Oilers. Okay, the Miami was the fifth game, the fourth game of the season there. Played on September 30th. That was was it at Three Rivers? Yeah, that was at Three Rivers. And Rick Strom, as I said, 5 of 7 for 76 yards in that game. I'm trying to find out. I can't believe we're using this podcast to talk about Rick Strom. His lone interception came in a 35-0 win over the Cleveland Browns. The last game of the 1990 season. And that game, Bubby Brister started, went 10-19 for 139 yards and, ooh, 4 touchdowns in a game for Bubby Brister. That didn't happen too many times during his career. Rick Strom, 2 of 3 for 18 yards, 1 interception in that game. So my goal, I think, at some point here next week is to find a clip of Rick Strom's interception against the Browns. And find a game against the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. And I think Rick actually was back down in Atlanta. He was the color commentator for Georgia Tech football for a while, and I think he's living in the Atlanta area. So, anybody has an update further on Rick, let us know. Like I said, he was a good friend of mine growing up. We didn't have email and cell phones and all that stuff back then, so I haven't. I've run into him now and then over the last 20 years, but I haven't seen him in a while. So
you were on Wall Street. I envision you have one of those big brick phones.
I don't think I had a cell phone till mid to late 90s, maybe 90. Mid 90s. I didn't have one until I graduated from business school, and that was 94. So I didn't have one before that.
Wow. I'm trying. I can't even remember back then. So my memory.
Wish I had had one 10 years earlier. Would have made life in New York a little more interesting. I spent a lot of time with quarters and payphones and trying to figure out when games were, trying to make bets and stuff like that. I'd walk around with 50 quarters in my pocket before I had a calling card.
Yeah, boy, so. The good old days of going to the sports bar pregame, making sure that the payphone was outside.
Dialing the 800 number to get the score updates. I mean, it was – oh, man, you'd go back and look and laugh at yourself back in those days.
And then stepping outside to call the man real quick in between games.
Still do it now. You just do it on your cell phone.
Yeah. And I told you, I know I told you the story, too. I used to watch a lot of NBA and play with that with the man in the 90s. And I can remember just dumping tons of unnecessary cash on some bad beats. I no longer watch basketball. I'll put it to you that way.
All right. So let's get back to the salary cap situation that we talked about on Friday, and it was very topical, and turned out with Jason LaCanfora of CBS. Sportsline kind of releasing an article, which Dave wrote up on Friday. You can see it on the site. And, look, Jason LaCanfora's job is to go through all 32 teams and over the course of the offseason and talk about kind of rumors that he hears and things that he thinks. And I'm sure he has some good sources, and I'm sure he has some less good sources. So I'm not really here to critique Jason LaCanfora in terms of, reports. There are plenty of reports during the offseason that aren't right. And it's easy to mock any idea of any player going to any team because there are 30 other teams. He's coming from one team, which he's probably not going to go back to, and there are 31 other teams, and it's easy to say no for any of the teams, and it's a dumb idea. And you know what? Some of them maybe aren't smart ideas, but, who would have picked Dont'a Hightower being a guy the Steelers would have talked to last year? Nobody had Joe Hayden, necessarily getting released and obviously signing with the Steelers. So, these things are all rolls of the dice and they make for good conversation. So no ideas are really dumb ideas. It's just, some make more sense than the other. And the point that we were talking about Friday, and I think some people maybe misunderstood the point, or when I expressed it on Twitter, I didn't express it very well. I think I expressed it reasonably well on the podcast, is nobody's suggesting Joe Hayden is a bad football player. I know a lot of people think Mike Mitchell isn't a good football player. Dave and I would probably beg to differ on that extreme view. Mike Mitchell didn't have a great season, and Mike Mitchell has, you know, he's had a couple decent seasons with the Steelers. Nobody's putting him in the Pro Bowl or on the All-Pro list, but he's, you know, I think he's better than some Steeler fans give him credit for. But I'm fully in agreement that he didn't have a very good season. Joe Hayden had a fine season. He didn't have a great season. He didn't have, certainly didn't have a bad season. And by the way, Ross Cockrell had a decent season for the New York Giants this year. So Le'Veon Bell had a pretty good season. Le'Veon Bell's first team All-Pro, but, you know, I'll come back to the fact that Le'Veon Bell touched the ball, you know, 100 more times than any back in the league. And if I gave you a choice of who had the better season, the Saints tandem of Kamara and Ingram or Le'Veon Bell, well, certainly the Saints tandem did. But that's a different conversation. The point is, when we're talking about Le'Veon Bell, when we're talking about Joe Hayden, when we're talking about Mike Mitchell, you can't talk about them in the vacuum of are they a good football player or not. You talk about them in the context of is Le'Veon Bell worth $15 million versus the alternatives that you have? And the answer might be yes. And the answer might be Joe Hayden is definitely worth the $11.9 million cap hit that you're going to have. And Mike Mitchell's worth, you know, the $8 million cap hit. And then, you know, the savings numbers are slightly different, and we can get into those if we need to. But the point is, you cannot – this isn't Major League Baseball with an open checkbook. You still have to do it within the salary cap. And if you're going to pay Cam and you're going to pay Stephon Tuitt and you're going to pay Antonio Brown and you're going to pay – Pouncey and DeCastro and Ben Roethlisberger, all of these guys are making, you know, $10-plus million a year. Well, you're not going to have room to pay everybody exactly, you know, what their market value may be. And so you've got to make some hard decisions. And, yeah, the Steelers don't typically cut good football players who are productive. But it comes back to the point I was trying to make on Friday. If, and I'm not suggesting this is the case, but if the Steelers think that through the mini camps and whatever they do that – Mike Hilton is their guy in the slot, and that Cam Sutton is an NFL-caliber player who's going to cost you, you know, let's say I'm guessing at the number, but, you know, $1 million. Well, all of a sudden, when you're thinking about, you know, the $175 million that you have to spend, and if Cam Sutton's going to give you 90% of what Joe Hayden gives you, and he's going to, you know, save you $10 million, hypothetically, well, you know, you have to do that kind of math in the picture and try and figure it out and see where you want to allocate the dollars, because the dollars may be allocated to a guy at inside linebacker, or that, you know, they might be allocated to another guy that isn't in the picture right now that you're trying to figure out. So, again, these are having these conversations, pointing out the strengths and weaknesses of each player is not saying Joe Hayden or Le'Veon Bell or anybody's a bad football player. It's are they worth what the Steelers are talking about potentially paying them either under contract or a franchise tag or whatever versus the alternatives that they have. So, you know, not to beat that horse to death, because I think we did enough on it on Friday, but just some of the comments on, you know, and again, I'm sorry, we get a lot of emails, but we also get a lot of response on Twitter. And some of the comments were, you know, Joe Hayden is better than Artie Burns. There's no chance they're going to get rid of Joe Hayden. Well, Joe Hayden's not competing with Artie Burns for, you know, a roster spot. Artie Burns is going to be on the roster. He's going to be the starting right corner. If you're thinking about competing, Joe Hayden's kind of competing against Cam Sutton, and he's competing with his contract against Cam Sutton. And that's why in Lacombe's report, he suggested that the Steelers would like Joe Hayden back at a lower price. Well, you know what? They would like Joe Hayden back at a lower price. That doesn't mean it's going to happen, but, you know, that's the whole job of Kevin Colbert and Omar Khan and everybody else to put the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle together to make them all fit.
Well, here's the thing when it comes to Hayden specifically and a guy like Sutton. Do you think they know already whether or not Cameron Sutton – can step in to be a every play starter in Joe Hayden's spot? Do you think?
I think they have. I think the fact that he played as many snaps as he did in a couple games at least gives them a sense. I don't think they know the answer necessarily, but they probably have a sense of, you know, is he as smart as we thought he was? Did he know? Was he in the right places? Did he understand the coverages? And I'm sure they have a very good sense of his athleticism. So I would lean toward yes on that question. You know, but as we talk about a lot, Mike Tomlin likes to say the second lap around the track is one where we expect to see the most improvement.
Okay, and the second thing here, and look, I think it's an interesting discussion what we had, I think, on Friday, talk about how do you go about getting Cameron Sutton on the field in 2018. I mean, is it just going to be a dime defender? You know, it's a good discussion to have because you only have this guy under contract for 4 years with his rookie deal, and he didn't play much of any during his rookie season because of injury, obviously. You know, is he going to play at least 50% of the snaps in 2018? I mean, you got a third-round pick invested.
He's not as the defense is currently constructed. Unless there's an injury, you wouldn't expect him to, right?
Right. Either he's going to take over for Hayden, or he's going to be moved to safety in order to get that amount of snaps. Okay. Now it goes back to when we're talking about Hayden,
or obviously somebody gets hurt.
Right. I mean, yeah. I guess because if we don't say that, people will email us and ask us why we didn't say it. Barring injury disclaimer. Otherwise, right, as you say, as things sit here right now, there's no reason to think. I mean, look. I mean, are you even going to play dime 50% of the time? You know,
not 50. No.
No. You know. So I mean, you're looking at maybe what a quarter. You know, 250 snaps plus obviously special teams snaps as we sit here today. So something would have to change drastically from what we're looking at right now in order for him to play 50% or more of the snaps. Now, going back to the talk about
him. Let me ask you one question before you move from there. If the Steelers draft a corner in the first or second round, would you assume that means Joe Hayden's gone?
Somebody's going to be gone. That's a starter. I mean, and you're not going to cut Artie Burns, so.
And you're not cutting Cam Sutton.
You're not cutting Mike Hilton. I mean.
Right. So you're saving the money, and if the number one in the world that's never going to happen, but in the 10 billion iterations of possibilities, when Mika Fitzpatrick drops to 28 and the Steelers take him with the first pick. Now, maybe they'd play him at safety. But anyway, let's say the top-ranked corner drops to the Steelers. They take him. That probably doesn't spell well for Joe Hayden being a Steeler, right?
Right, but, I mean, you're still – and, you know, we talked about this. I mean, he's due a $9 million base salary this year. A $1 million roster bonus is coming up soon with him. If you're the Steelers and you go to Joe Hayden, and if you're Joe Hayden, the Steelers want you to take a $3 million pay cut. Are you taking it if you're Joe Hayden?
Yep.
You are.
I think he's made a lot of money. I think we're talking about him making $6 million versus, you know, what he would have made. I think I'd take it if they're asking him to take a $3 million salary. I might go to the open market, but you know, Joe Hayden's probably got some value out there. I don't think anybody's going to sign him to an eight-figure contract, a $10 million a year contract.
Well, here's the thing, you know, I just cannot foresee the Steelers signing him to a three-year, what was it, $27 million contract as a one-year rental. I mean, how do you
– Right. I mean, obviously things change, so maybe that wasn't the expectation, but you still got to deal with the realities of today, right? I agree with what your premise, that wasn't the goal when they signed him.
Had Hayden not missed the five or whatever games that he missed, five or six games with a broken fibula, do you think we'd be talking about him being okay as a $10 million earner in 2018? How much of that of him missing those games do you think hurt his value, or was it the player?
The only reason I think it hurt his value is because it got Cam Sutton on the field. And if Cam Sutton were a complete unknown, I'd be more hesitant to even have the conversation. So I think Cam Sutton getting some game experience was valuable for Cam Sutton. And you know, look, I'm still betting on Joe Haden being a Steeler. I'm not standing here telling you Joe Hayden's not going to be a Steeler. I'm just having the conversation that's being had in the Steeler offices. And if they don't have those, you know, it would be negligent not to be having all the conversations in the Steeler offices. So I think ironically, him getting hurt and letting Cam Sutton play was the negative, not necessarily that he got hurt and he's injury prone or anything like that.
Well, you know, I learned over the years, never say never when it comes to some of these things. And I won't say that Haden won't be a salary cap casualty here before, you know, in the next few weeks. But I will be very surprised if he is jettisoned here in the next couple weeks. I'll be surprised if he takes a pay cut. I think if you want to cut his cap number, you just do a restructure with the idea that you're probably going to cut him. Look, I mean, you can clear $4.5 million in salary cap space this year by doing a full restructure with him right now. Now, at the same time, if you do that, you create potential $4.5 million in dead money. This same time next.
Sure.
Next.
Sure. That is kicking the can down the road.
Right, and that, I mean, $4 million is a lot to, you know, kick down the can. But you know, overall, you would still clear a little bit. I mean, based on what the way the books would say, you would still be saving a little bit of cap money by releasing them. But then there's the whole dead money versus real money type conversation that you could have. So. Long and short of it, David, is, I mean, how many players would the Steelers love to have at a lower base salary or lower total earnings than they're scheduled to earn now? Probably quite a few of them, but the reality of the matter is that just doesn't happen. And, if you cut Haden, I mean, obviously, it'd be because you would think that Cameron Sutton's going to come in and start. So that gives you Cam Sutton, Mike Hilton, and Artie Burns as your starters. I'm guessing Brian Allen would then go up into the rotation because, look, I mean, William Gay, even if he survives, I mean, there's a strong chance, even if William Gay survives most of the offseason, that he still doesn't make the 53-man roster. Same goes for Cody Sensabaugh as well. So I guess your next man up would be Brian Allen, right?
Yeah, and that's when you look, and if you're doing this type of stuff, you say, do you try to see if you can find a Cody Sensabaugh type player who you think would be an upgrade on Cody Sensabaugh? And if it costs you $3 million, well, that's the cost of doing business versus Joe Haden. So, or, you know, $1.5 million or two, whatever the right number is. But, you know, there probably isn't enough experience in that group to feel all that comfortable. Sensabaugh has some experience. I don't know if he did himself any favors with his play over the course of the time he got. So, you know, would you like to upgrade? Or again, on the off chance in the first three rounds they go to, you know, find another corner, that's a guy maybe you look to get on the field sooner rather than later, and you say, okay, we have enough confidence in Sutton, and we got our backups in Allen and some draft pick.
You know, and talking in that same article, one of my followers, some of yins just can't read or comprehend, I don't think. Look, me suggesting that I won't be surprised that Mike Mitchell is still on the roster after the start of the new league year in March is not me advocating Mike Mitchell not being cut or thinking that Mike Mitchell might not be cut at all. It gets into back to the thing that you better have a plan if you cut him now, and that if you cut Mike Mitchell right now today, you better make sure that you're not replacing him with J.J. Wilcox. I think it's foolish to replace him with Robert Golden. you know, you could suggest that maybe Sean Davis move back to, you know, move full time, but you're still going to need a safety regardless because of it. You just better, and look, there's no guarantee you're going to get X player during free agency either. You know, apologies to the Trey, you know, to the Trey Boston fan. Look, yeah, I think Trey Boston would be a great addition to the Steelers, but he's going to be one of the most him and Eric Reed are going to be the two most marketable, you know, kind of free safety, free agents on the market. And how many times do we see the Steelers win a bidding war when it comes to very highly ranked, you know, positional players early on in free agency? So, you bet. All I'm saying is, if you cut Mike Mitchell now, as opposed to later, you better have a damn good plan in place to replace him. Now, you can hold on to him, see what you get in the draft, or maybe later on, you know, maybe during free agency, and you're still going to save that $5 million minus roster displacement, you know, assuming that you find the right plan in there. And look, that let's say $4.5 million that you would essentially save by cutting Mike Mitchell, more than covers your rookie draft class following roster displacement and all well too. So that's basically your rookie draft class and the buffer that you like in salary cap space to go into the season. So you have to ask yourself, how bad do you need that $4.5 million in cap space? If you don't need it very bad right now, then I think you should hold on to Mike Mitchell on into the offseason to see how things go, because you don't have anybody right now on that roster that I would consider an upgrade over him, and you don't know what's going to happen in a draft. So my whole argument here when it comes to Mike Mitchell is, look, yes, he is an obvious potential roster or salary cap casualty this offseason, and he might very well be out the door 5 minutes after David and I get off this podcast. But don't be surprised if he makes it past the start of the new year. There's no roster bonus associated with him, so you don't have to worry about that. And I think it comes back to Mike Mitchell, is how bad do you want that $4.5 million in salary cap space? If you absolutely have to have it now and you think you have a good plan in place, by all means, get him out the door now. However, if you have kind of a questionable plan of how you're going to replace him right now, and that $4.5 million salary cap space is not absolutely crucial to you, then that's where I'm coming from of saying I won't be surprised if he's on the roster on March 17th. Does that make sense? I'm not advocating, say, I'm not waving the flag here saying Mike Mitchell should absolutely be the starting free safety for the Steelers in 2018. But if not him right now, who is it going to be? You know?
Yep. All right. So I think we've covered those two topics now in full, all related to Le'Veon Bell. And
you're not cutting Vance McDonald, are you? I mean,
I think of all the guys to get paid, you know, look, if you don't cut Vance McDonald, then tight end has to be a, you know, a top three round pick or a free agent acquisition. So, look, they signed Ladarius Green at $5 million a year, if I remember correctly. And I love that signing. And Vance McDonald, paying him 4.3 to be, you know, effectively your starting tight end, that's the market rate. Vance McDonald's not going anywhere in my book. He's the easiest of the three guys in terms of value for money. He's obviously the cheapest, but yeah, I don't see that really being a hard conversation.
Right. Well, here's what Locke Comfort wrote about him. Tight end Vance McDonald didn't do much after being acquired, and he'd save over $4 million against the cap if let go as expected. You can't.
Yeah. So maybe he gets that one wrong. You know, look, he's not going to get every guy on every team right. So, you know, I don't think his analysis is very good there. But okay, like we said, that's why you talk to local guys about local teams, because guys covering 32 teams, it's an impossible job.
But, you know, look, I mean, we're obviously going to see one or two veterans, I think, cut here in the coming days because, you know, or at least that's the kind of sense that we got from Kevin Colbert recently. And it goes back to the whole, you know, I think Wilcox is the easy one. But when it comes to guys like William Gay, I mean, even a combined package of William Gay, Cody Sensabaugh, and Darius Heyward-Bey, once again, I'm not advocating the three at all making the 53-man roster right now as we sit here in February. But on the flip side, do you really need the whatever cap space, the piddling salary cap space that you would clear by cutting them now in roster displacement? Now, the pushback I'm sure listeners will have, well, Dave, you know, if you say, you know, $4.5 million here and $2.5 million here and a million here, well, all of a sudden you created, you know, $8 million in salary cap space. I get that. But I think you got to look at each one of these guys kind of in a vacuum, and that's kind of where I was going with Mike Mitchell and the whole discussion there. Look, I will not, it's like I said, as soon as we get off this podcast, if I see on Twitter that Mike Mitchell has been cut, I'm not surprised. However, a lot of you listening out there, if we get to March to start a new league year and Mike Mitchell is somehow still on this 90-man roster, I don't want you to act surprised either.
Right. I'm with you on all of that. Okay. The latest NFL cap casualty news people saw probably was Brian Cushing is told by the Houston Texans he's going to get let go. You know, we're going to see these names almost on a daily basis here over the next couple of weeks as teams get compliant with the new salary cap, which has not been released, and the rule of 51 and all that they have to do into the next the new league year. So really, we're looking at a period here of 2 weeks, almost to the day, I think, when this is going to happen. And we'll, you know, the Steelers will probably make a headline or two, and every team in the NFL will hear along the way, Dave. So that's the news, and then we'll see. I would imagine on the first day of, you know, the new league year, is that the first day of free agency as well? Or are they together?
Right. Both of them together.
Yeah. So, you know, Kirk Cousins is going to be a domino that falls, I would assume, really quickly. And then I would expect the quarterback situation, you know, a guy like Tyrod Taylor may stay out there for a day, a week. Teddy Bridgewater may stay out there. But the Cousins domino is probably going to fall, and that will be the biggest one in the entire NFL in the offseason. He'll get the biggest contract that anybody's ever gotten when he signs with Denver or Cleveland or the Jets or whoever signed him, and Arizona, who, you know, pick your team. And then the other teams are going to start to scramble a little bit. But, you know, it's also a quarterback class in the draft where – you could see, if you include Lamar Jackson and Mason Rudolph, you could see six quarterbacks go in the first round. So if teams aren't scrambling to sign the Josh McCowns, they may be scrambling to move up in the draft and do some other things. So it should be a very eventful, as it usually is, not always, but it should be a very eventful first couple days of free agency coming up in 2 weeks.
Oh, always is. That first official week, man. You know, tons of movement. You know, the big thing this year, remember last year we was waiting quite a few days for the first bigger shoe to drop with Tyson Alualu with the Steelers last offseason. Do you think, and then you go back, you know, what, 4 or 5 years, off seasons ago, where out of nowhere the Steelers had an agreement with Mike Mitchell in place right at the start of free agency. How many of us saw that coming, you know, that year? At least, you know, probably not necessarily, you know, not surprised by the position, but just the name and how early they struck during free agency. So, you know, will... You know, we kind of talked about this. Will they make a strike right at the start? Because you would think to get a guy like Avery Williamson in Tennessee, the inside linebacker, DeMario Davis, another guy we talked about, Trey Boston, Eric Reed. You would think in order for the Steelers to get a high-profile guy at either the safety or inside linebacker position, they're going to have to strike early this year, right?
Zach Brown was on the market forever last year. So, it's just hard to know how many, at that position. Maybe, if there's a guy or two that'll get taken off the board. I don't think, all the capable guys are going to be gone in the first week. I mean, look, they waited forever to even have the conversation with Dont'a Hightower.
Are we sure? When was Dont'a Hightower brought in? It seemed that was early on in the process, right?
I felt like it wasn't the first week.
March the 14th.
I mean, that's okay. So it wasn't right out of the chute, but it was early on. Yeah, that's fair. It wasn't day one coming to visit the Steelers.
When was the start of free agency? It was like the 9th or the 11th last year, right?
I don't have that number off the top of my head.
2007 free agent signing period. I'll have to look that up, but it seems like it was like the 9th of the 9th of the 11th. Let's see here. I got the 17 March 7th to 9th. Let's see. Ninth was the start of the new league year last year. I was right. So and I said when did I say that Hightower?
14th.
All right, so a weekend. That was about right for a guy like Hightower, probably.
Yeah, I think the Steelers will have their the inside linebackers. There's enough going on around the league that inside linebackers aren't going to go. Somebody may have target a guy or two, but there'll be guys available.
Okay, there's no sense us talking about the exclusive rights free agents with the Steelers because most of those guys are already under contract right now, talking about guys like Xavier Grimble, Cameron Kanade, Mike Hilton, B.J. Finney. Obviously, Matt Filer's re-signed. Jordan Berry's re-signed. So a quick discussion here. About some restricted guys and some tenders. We don't have to worry about Roosevelt Nix now that he's signed that big deal. So basically, I think it comes out, and Greg Ducrey, a lot of people probably still don't know, probably didn't know that he's technically, still on the roster, heading to restricted free agency. You're definitely not going to place a restricted tender on him. The two really big names when it comes to restricted free agency, or actually three when it comes to, I guess, four. We could have a discussion about Toussaint. But are you placing a low tender on Eli Rogers right now?
The short answer is nobody's going to sign Eli Rogers. So do whatever they think is best. I mean, I guess, but it doesn't matter.
A lot of people didn't think the Steelers would put a tender on Ross Cockrell last year, right?
Well, you put a tender on your starting cornerback. Of course you do.
Well, a lot of people still didn't think that. Eli Rogers is going to be an interesting he's coming off of that knee injury. He's not going to be ready for a couple more months, so he's not going to be in high demand, I wouldn't think, right out of the chute. So, but on the flip side, if you don't put a tender on him, he could sign, with anybody. Now, he said just recently over the weekend that he wants to return to the Steelers, yada, yada. In other words,
you do what you need to control his rights. So,
So you're saying put the tender on him
for almost
$2 million.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting to see. I'm not sure I would, David, I'm not sure I would place the tender on him. Definitely going to be one to watch there. Anthony Chiccolo, that's a slam dunk, right? You're putting a restricted original round tender on him.
Yep. Sixth round guy. Yep.
Okay. Chris Boswell, are you putting a right of first refusal low tender on him, or are you putting a second round tender on him?
Well, I think you're going to get a deal done with Boswell at some point. I got to remember exactly how all the stuff works, but.
Being as how he was undrafted, if you put the low tender, the right of first refusal tender on Boswell, he could sign an offer sheet with another team, and then all you would have is the right to match it.
Yeah, that's fine.
Well, what if, okay.
If somebody wants to, you know, look, the Steelers are going to get a deal with Boswell, and the going rate for kickers is $4 or $5 million a year. So if somebody wants to go out and, you know, I don't see somebody going and, you know, trying to poach Boswell at $7 million a year and the Steelers letting it go. So, you know, I don't know which way they're going to go. But again, we don't see this often. Doesn't mean it never happens. But, you know, how many teams go out and sign guys to offer sheets to begin with? It is a slim, slim part of the NFL free agency market, just in general. You know, it rarely happens.
I'd put a second round tender on him so I don't have to worry about it. And then I'd work out a long term deal with him later in the offseason.
Yeah, and that probably is the right tactic.
All right, Fitzgerald Toussaint, you're not tendering him at all, right?
Nope.
All right, so you know, we expect tenders for Chicolo and Boswell, and you and I are probably split on what happens with Eli Rogers, but that's it. That's the list. You're not worried about Justin Hunter, Sean Spence, Stephen Ridley, Daniel McCullers, Arthur Motes, or Chris Hubbard hitting unrestricted free agency, correct?
Nope. But I guess I'm going to be very interested to see what kind of market Chris Hubbard generates. And, you know, good luck to him. He's been a functional, useful player. Is somebody going to give him $5 million a year to be a starting right tackle? Maybe. He would certainly, you know, I'm sure the Steelers would welcome him back at $3.5 million a year. Just thinking about where Gilbert is in his contract and some other guys, they probably can't afford him at, you know, $5-6 million a year. So I'm curious to see how his career moves forward from here.
I think he deserves the right to potentially start for someone else. And look, I mean, we could pick out, you know, easily 6, 7, 8 teams that could probably use a guy like Chris Hubbard at right tackle. So I think he's going to get paid more than what the Steelers want to pay him. And it will be interesting to watch him, you know, get a job and play as a starter, which I think he will somewhere else next season.
Yeah, and look, the Steelers have obviously had the conversation. Somebody's brought it up of, you know, would we rather Chris Hubbard be our right tackle than Marcus Gilbert? Gilbert's not making a ton of money now because he signed that 5-year deal way back when. And off the top of my head, I think it was $6 million average annual value. So I'm not sure exactly what his cap number is, but he's been a guy who's been a bit injured during his career. And, you know, the Steelers didn't miss a beat with Hubbard in there, you know, which was the endless debate we had when Gilbert got suspended for the 4 games that he got suspended for. So, you know, that's something that I'm sure they've had the conversation. I don't profess to say that they're gonna move on from Gilbert, but again, you got to have all the conversations.
Yeah, Gilbert's set to make $4 million base, a little bit over $4 million base salary this season, and because of past restructures and whatnot, his cap number is closing close to $7.4 million. So, you know, it's not his fault his cap number's that high.
He has 2 years left on the deal, right? Is it this year and next year?
At least, let's see, he has, he's under contract through 2019.
Yeah, this year, next year, yeah.
So, look, I mean, Le'Veon Bell's going to be the only unrestricted free agent that's back with the Steelers. I think that's safe to say. Moving forward into free agency here.
Stephen Ridley. So, you know, somebody like Stephen Ridley could get invited to camp on a cheap deal.
Yeah, it would have to be from the minimum.
Yeah, but I mean, that could happen.
Yeah, that's the only way I foresee that happen is for the minimum with him with no guarantee. I don't understand. A lot of these people still have the Steelers, mocking a running back early to the Steelers. If they get Le'Veon Bell locked up to a deal,
That's going to be everybody's going to know the answer to that. You know, come draft time, it's either or. Either it is going to be or it's not going to be. So.
And I think it comes back to down to Le'Veon Bell once again. Now, look, I don't think come Tuesday the Steelers are going to slap the tag on Bell. There's no sense because you got until March the 6th to work out a deal with him. So why just because it's the first day go ahead and slap the tag on
him? No, they're not going to annoy him by doing that.
Right. I mean, you would annoy him even more if you did that on the first day there. So then the question becomes, are we going to see a deal like Bell, kind of hinted might happen before? Well, really, this time to tomorrow, or by March the 6th. I mean, we're not talking but just a couple of weeks here, so that's definitely going to be something to watch there. Look, I'll say I constantly get accused of being a Le'Veon Bell hater, and that's not the case. And I think this kind of goes back to what you said, David, in one of your rants earlier. I am fine with Le'Veon Bell playing underneath the franchise tag this year. And that number, of course, is almost $15 million. Where my biggest fear at with Le'Veon Bell is a guaranteed money deal, that marries him to the Steelers for, let's say, the next 3 years. That's my biggest fear, especially if it's more than $15 million. That's the only thing I really struggle with when it comes to Le'Veon Bell because of the past injury history, the workload that he's had, his type of running style, the dip in numbers. Like, look, he had great numbers last year, but as I have said, and David said again this morning, a result of Le'Veon Bell's numbers last year was volume touches there. How many people out there really think that this is a guy that can do 400 touches over 400 touches again in 2018? If you answer that's not a problem, okay. But what happens after back-to-back 400 touch seasons, when you use history as a guide? My biggest fear is that you get this guy signed long-term to a lot of guaranteed money, and you're kind of married to him, if you will, for the next 2 or 3 years, and then he just falls off the cliff. That's my biggest concern. He's a hell of a pass blocker. He's hell of a guy out of the backfield with the ball in his hands. That patient running style obviously will drive you mad at times, but very rarely do you see him not fall forward at least and get you a yard or two, even if it looks like he's going to get trapped for negative yardage in the backfield. It's just that's my biggest fear when it comes to him. And we'll see. I mean, I just struggle with how the Steelers are going to get him signed to a long-term deal that's $15 million or under without having to give him a ton of guaranteed money. But we'll see.
All right, good stuff. If something dramatic happens, Dave and I'll find a way to get something up. But why don't you plan on us being back a week from tomorrow, which will put us on a week from tomorrow will be the 27th of February. And then we'll probably do something the following week, March 5th. We'll probably do something, Monday, Wednesday, Friday that week, the week of March 5th, because we'll set up the new year on the on Monday the 5th, and we'll want to do something on Wednesday the 7th because we'll have some free agency news to talk about, and then we'll come back and do a regular show on Friday. So a little bit of a different schedule coming up over the next 2 weeks. We'll be off this Friday. Plan on us the following Tuesday and Friday. And then as we go into the new league year, we'll go Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Yeah, and don't forget, we got the combine starting, you know, around there too, and that's usually hard for me and you to work around to. It might end up some later afternoon shows, whatnot on a few of those days there. So we got to mix that in there in between and all. So all right, I think we beat this up pretty good, and obviously Alex Cazor will start appearing on some of these shows as well too once we get past the NFL combine. In the meantime. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the cause, you can go to SteelersDepot.com and hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. David, I can't believe we figured out a way to talk about, early in the show too, to talk about Rick Strom.
My man.
We ought to get some sort of either bonus points or deduction points for technical merit on that one. All right, I will talk to you a week from tomorrow.
Safe travels, and as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.